Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez. I'm here with my co-host, Shelley Verstrate, to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. And y'all, it is less than 24 hours from opening day as you're listening to this. I'm so excited. Shelley, what are you most looking forward to? We're recording 2 days from opening day, but like by the time everybody's listening to this, there's baseball tomorrow. It's great.
Yeah, I'm excited to like open up like my MLB TV on my TV and actually be games that count. Cause I mean, I've watched a few spring training games here and there, mostly just like clips on Twitter or something, but just actually like tuning into a game. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really care if, you know, this team wins or this team loses or whatever. Like it actually means something. I'm so excited for the season to start.
I am too. And like, as I was doing fab stuff on the NFC on Sunday, I was like, oh my gosh, like we have actual information and real people who we know are going to be in the rotation. I'm like adding Luis Gil and DL Hall and guys who I didn't even know were going to be on the opening day rosters when I was drafting back in February and whatnot. So it's just really exciting and fun. We've already had a couple of real games in the Korea series. We've also had some wild storylines that we'll talk about with the Shohei Ohtani interpreter business, brewing labor unrest in the MLBPA. But before we get to that and all of our takes, we are thrilled to be joined by Andy Behrens. You know Andy from his work at Yahoo Fantasy and as the president of the FSWA. I know Andy from once making a trade with him in the tout table. Andy, welcome to Fantasy Feud on Baseball Eve. How's it going?
It's going very well. I believe that is still the only trade ever made in tout in the shared community spreadsheet. So that was really exciting. I felt like we were really pioneers there. So that was pretty great. It's good to be with you both.
That was super fun. And for those who are wondering, it was Mike Clayton Kershaw for Yusei Suzuki. I thought that was a solid trade. Yeah. It wound up not mattering. It was a couple of seasons ago. Like Kershaw got hurt almost immediately, and then Seiya got hurt almost immediately. So we traded. That's
actually my long history of trades in tout. Usually, almost invariably, the player I acquire is about to get hurt. Like I should just announce it publicly whenever I trade for anybody. I traded for Estuary Ruiz last year, like on the day that he slid back into first base, and I think it was a thumb injury, right? So like whoever I trade for in tout absolutely is a guarantee to get hurt within the next 3 days.
I felt so bad because our trade had basically just gone through and beneficial. And then Clayton Kershaw got hurt. I was like, God, should I like just make an offer to take this back? And within 24 hours, Seiya Suzuki landed on the IL too. And I was like, well, I guess the universe wanted both of us to have two hurt guys on our IL instead of on our rosters. But it seemed like a great idea at the time.
It really did. It was perfectly fair, actually, in the moment.
Before we get into some of these debates, let's talk about some of these storylines that are going on right now. And I'm going to start with the Shohei Ohtani interpreter business. This is just a wild story. I've never in my life imagined a story like this. It seems like Ipe was just not all that straightforward of a dude. There seems to be like made up biography information. I hope that the story that Shohei and his attorneys have put out there. Right now, I almost called them attorneys, like Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani and his attorneys have put out there is the right one because it's the one that makes this guy who is so great at baseball come off the best and the one that will certainly not result in any sort of MLB discipline or interaction or anything. And also, I'm a realist and I'm not sure I believe that that is going to be the case. Andy is our guest. What are you thinking about this whole Shohei Ohtani business?
Yeah, I mean, the least of what we can say is that it is just incredibly unfortunate, and it is incredibly unfortunate that the that we had like multiple conflicting messages when the news initially broke, right? So I mean, I don't know how anyone can be of the opinion that, or can have an opinion that is different from the one that you just expressed, which is, man, I hope that everything Shohei just said is correct, right? Like I hope that's what it is, and he's at no fault here, and you know, perhaps he can recover. Not that you know Shohei is hurting for money necessarily, but you know, if he's been victimized here, that's terrible. But I hope this is absolutely true. There have been, you know, that just in the category of things you want to believe, I've heard plenty of people say that Shohei has very little interest in sports that are not baseball. So I find it, you know, a little bit difficult to believe that he would be gambling on a whole bunch of other things. Again, I hope what he has told us is true. And he's had a pretty spotless public image to this point. So I have no reason to think he's lying about this. I hope that's right.
Yeah, that kind of sums up how I was feeling about it. And I also, I mean, as much as I hate to move it to fantasy baseball, because whenever it's a big deal and $4.5 million being stolen from the guy who is not just your interpreter, but like by all accounts, your closest friend and in the area of like with that, those interpreter relationships, they're together all the time. 162 games is so many games, all through spring training, traveling together. That's a close relationship. You can tell it's a close relationship from watching it on TV, but by all accounts, it was a very close relationship. But it does impact the game. And Shelley, I have to ask if you have any drafts left between now and when baseball starts on Thursday, does it impact where you take Shohei Ohtani in a draft?
Well, I personally don't have any drafts left, but just going into it, just thinking about if I did have any, whether it's a 12-team, 10-team, 15-team, NL only, I don't think that I would really downgrade him any, because you know, I just, you know, just like y'all said, I think the world of Ohtani, and he just didn't seem like the type. I mean, we've throughout history, there's always people who can deceive or whatever and totally change, you know, you think that this person is this way and then they're actually not. So, but it's like, for draft purposes, I'm not digging him at all. He's still definitely a first-round pick, you know, maybe around pick 11, pick 12, pick 13, something like that. Yeah, so that's kind of how I'm feeling, but it was just a crazy, wild story, and I never thought that I would see something like this in baseball to, like, Ohtani's level, you know what I'm saying? Like, someone at his ilk, like, with all the endorsements that he has, how good of a player. Like, I never thought that we would see this in baseball, but here we are.
Yeah, it's a great call out, just the magnitude of the implications here. It reminds me a little bit of the rumors surrounding Michael Jordan way back in the day, when it was like, did Michael Jordan lose a year of his basketball career because of a gambling issue? And I want to be clear, like, I don't think we ever learned the answer to that. I think it was a lot of speculation and some things that were out there, but that was sort of the thing that immediately came to mind for me.
I will say though, like in that moment, Michael was like, yeah, I gambled. I love it. I'm rich. You know, like Michael's response to that was, I can afford to do it. I haven't lost anything that I can't afford to lose. And he was a little bit defensive about it. I mean, it wasn't the flat denial that we've gotten from Ohtani. And again, I hope that what Ohtani has said is true. I have no reason to believe it's not. He seems like somebody who just sort of lives in a bubble inside of which it's all baseball all the time. So I hope that's right.
I hope that's right, too. That's an excellent note for us to move on to where we want to go today, which is some fantasy baseball debates that may help you as you're doing some season prep. But with the season so close, by the time you're listening to this, it's highly possible you have no drafts left. You're just waiting to see how the season plays out. And so what we've done today is a little bit different than all the draft prep episodes we've been doing so far. We've just got some of our hottest takes to start the season, that and we are going to die on these hills. And I'm very excited about it. As a reminder, this is a debate show. So we have 3 minutes to make our case, 3 minutes to make the countercase. The moderator role will shift throughout. There's a 2-minute question and answer period between making those cases, and then a 1-minute rebuttal that sometimes we need. And sometimes we find that we're all in agreement, so we don't need those rebuttals, but we'll just kind of go where the debates take us. And we're going to start on one that I'm going to moderate, even though I have feelings on this one, y'all. He's one of my most rostered players. Let's start with Zidane Rafaela's hot spring start and whether or not he is on track for a 2024 breakout. I have loved watching this kid play so far. The Red Sox are my AL team. He's been crushing it in spring training. Andy, as our guest, you get to go first. You have 3 minutes to make your case for Sedin Rafaela.
Yeah, well, you and I are in the same place on Rafaela because I don't get him everywhere because there's like a cult of Rafaela, right? That of people who really love him. But I give him a lot of places. And one of the nice things about him, at least, I don't know his position eligibility everywhere, but at Yahoo, he's shortstop eligible and outfield eligible, right? He's probably going to acquire second base eligibility pretty soon. So that's a really flexible, like multi-tool of a player. Plus we know he has power and speed, right? Like last year in the minors, 20 homers, 36 stolen bases. He hit .302, did most of his damage at AAA as well. And as you say, he's got kind of intangibles, right? I'm not going to like, he's not like peak Javi Baez exactly, but there's a lot of flash to his game that is just really, really entertaining. He's great on the bases. He's great. You know, he's great in the field, just really, really fun. And obviously a big spring too. 3 homers, 6 doubles, 4 steals. He's going to play. And again, he offers the kind of positional flexibility that we absolutely love.
Awesome. Shelley, you are also a Red Sox fan and you get the enviable task of making the case against Rafaela and his breakout spring.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely play the role of being a bitter Red Sox fan because I usually am in that role. With Rafaela, I love him. Like, I really do. Like, from a fielding standpoint, like, he is phenomenal in center field. But the biggest bugaboo that I have with him is his plate approach. He swings at everything. Every time I've read a scouting report from Rafaela coming up through the minors, is he swings at everything. So that's not, in my opinion, that's not a player that I really like to roster. Yes, you can get that, you know, Javi Baez, like, couple years where it was, like, really good. You know, we could get the just, I don't know. It's just not my type of player because it is so volatile. Yes, the ceiling is extremely high, but the floor is also really low because it's like we have not seen him against the best pitching. Like, you know, Andy, you said that he was doing really well in AAA. Well, AAA pitching, and, you know, was it really that great? Who knows, right? I'm just not confident enough in his abilities throughout, you know, everything that I have read and heard about him coming up through the minors. I am just not ready to say, yes, he's going to be a star, but I could totally be wrong. He has the skill set to be good. I'm just not banking on it because I haven't seen it against the best pitching.
I totally hear you on the approach, Shelley. And I want to ask you a quick question here because this may also just be a blind spot of mine. The comps that I've gotten for Rafaela when I've asked this question, full disclosure, Shelley is one of the people I asked this question to. I was like, I'm taking this kid everywhere. And Shelley was like, the free swinging approach, it's going to kill you. So I'm either like, Shelley and I are going to return to this question at the end of the season. And one of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong. The comps for me are two other guys I roster a lot, Christopher Morel and Johan Rojas, both of who I'm like, yes, sky is the limit. Let's go. So I'm curious, are those also players that you're a little bit out on, that Morel Rojas profile, Shelley?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm taking hitters, sadly, I go the Cleveland Guardians approach where I like contact versus free swinging. Sometimes that hurts me. Sometimes it doesn't. Most of the time, I don't think that it does because it just scares me like too much because I mean, this spring he has an 18.8 swinging strike percentage, which is a little bit higher than what he was doing in the minor leagues last year. So he hasn't like changed any. He's still kind of like the same guy, but he hasn't really faced like the best pitching. So it's just my approach. It just scares me too much.
Andy, you mentioned Javi Baez, and one of the things that always comes to my mind, he's one of my favorite Cubs, got him back there, one of his bobbleheads behind me. I remember an interview with him where they asked him about the fact that he like never walks, and his answer was, I want to be swinging, and it was the most Javi pure answer ever. Rafaela definitely has the I want to be swinging approach to baseball. Does that scare you a little bit, or are you in on the high ceiling guys, particularly at a place where Rafaela goes, which admittedly is earlier in drafts now than it was early in the season, but I've been getting him after the 20th round in a lot of places.
Yeah, I have to say, you and I, by the way, are also together on Rojas. And Rojas is a guy who has not had a very good spring, and I'm worried about him. But this is my type, right? Like the little bit of power, a lot of speed. And it's mostly a fantasy type, right? Like if I were a Red Sox fan, I would probably feel differently about how Rafael is going to be used, how he's going to eventually, what sort of player he's going to grow into and what the ceiling is going to be. I actually feel like the big knock against him should be like, I don't think he's going to be a top of the order guy to begin the season, right? Like if he's hitting at the bottom of the order, those are headwinds for fantasy. But I don't really mind a guy who is up there to hit. I'm also assuming that he's not going to settle in as a guy who hits 220, 225, something like that. I think he's got better contact skills than that. So I'm not panicky about the batting average. The batting average has been pretty consistently useful throughout the minors. So I feel, I don't know, at the current draft cost, I just feel really, really good about him and fairly confident. And, you know, the bias thing was meant as a, you know, compliment, because I thought I was playing to your interest, right? Like we both really enjoyed vintage Javi Baez. I wasn't speaking of current Javi Baez. I meant like flashy, fun, young Javi.
Well, and the thing is, this is a redraft league, right? Like 25-year-old Javi Baez was a great person to have on your fantasy team. Now, admittedly, and then I'll turn it over to both of you for rebuttals, I don't think I had a lot of like 26-year-old, 25-year-old Javi Baez on my teams because he was going in like the third round. And that free swinging approach in the third round makes me a lot more nervous. That's the Ellie De La Cruz profile in the third round. But in the 18th, 19th, 20th round, like I will scoop up all the Rojas, Morel, Rafaela I can. And I just want the upside guy. Shelley, you get our first rebuttal, and then Andy, you get a minute too.
Yeah, maybe it's just me. I just default to a lot of people who watch a lot of these more minor leaguers than I do. And coming up through the minors, they were like, yeah, he's doing really well against low-level pitching. But he's just like, he's just swinging at everything, which is like totally fine for where he is. But I haven't seen any growth in that area. So for me, as honestly, like a safe drafter, he is just not a profile that I want. But I could totally see where I could be totally wrong.
I appreciate that honesty. And you know what? All of these profiles can work for different reasons. So it's something definitely to keep in mind. Andy, you get a minute for your rebuttal.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'd say is that like the free swinging approach isn't, and we'll talk about some guys who can be free swingers and it doesn't always work, right? But it's like, it's worked for him at every level so far. So he may run into a situation where he has to change his ways or he has to, you know, where he's got a huge learning curve ahead of him, but he hasn't really, I don't know, he hasn't really run into it yet, right? Like last year was a hugely successful year for him. And I feel like some of this is prospect pushback because he is a guy who is pretty consistently, I think, outperformed expectations for the prospect D types.
Yeah, I'm with you on the outperforming expectations thing. I actually have a whole thesis on this that I'll share on the show at some point in time, but that's for another debate. We're going to move on. We're going to stick with the Red Sox for a second. I'm going to turn the moderator duties over to Andy as we talk about some Red Sox pitchers this time.
Yeah, we're talking about, now listen, this is my first shot at moderating and I was not a debate kid as you were, Sarah. So you have to be gentle here. And I'm just going to let you guys go as long as you need to go. I'm not a big clock hawk. You can be the clock hawk here. We're talking Cutter Crawford. As perhaps the surprise pitcher in the Red Sox rotation and the guy, like a lot of expectations for a lot of other members of that rotation, but I won't even admit my bias yet here, but we're going to talk about Cutter Crawford's chances to be that ace and to be the guy who really emerges from that rotation. And who wants to start here? Sarah, you want to start?
I mean, I can start, but I think Shelley should actually start this one as the Crawford case because I've got the counter case, which is a different Red Sox pitcher.
Okay. Shelley, we'll go optimistic approach first.
Yeah, Cutter Crawford. When Sarah told me, Andy, that you know you would be coming on the podcast, and she said, "Oh, we're gonna do like bold predictions." I'm like, "Okay, Cutter Crawford is who." You know, Brian Bayo, who everyone thinks Brian Bayo is going to be. and about like 2 to 3 weeks ago, that sounded a little bit more hot takey, but Cutter Crawford is like really, I don't know, has gotten like fantasy baseball Twitter a flutter. So he's really been rising. So maybe this was like a little bit bold, more bold a couple weeks ago, but Cutter Crawford, it has honestly, like when I was doing deep dives on some pitchers this offseason, even as a Red Sox fan, he surprised me because, I mean, he was doing well, right? When I was watching him, you know, on my TV, and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. I liked him when he was in the minors. He had like, of course, he had like a good cutter because his name is Cutter, right? but it was just, it was once I did like a bigger deep dive, I fell more in love with him. His fastball is absolutely amazing. So his fastball last year, and he was working as a reliever at the beginning of the season and then a starter at the end. So take that with a, you know, a small grain of salt. Anyway, batters only hit 164, 260, 327, and he had a 36.7% strikeout rate on his four-seamer. He's added pitches. He has a good four-pitch mix. He is in the rotation, and he has had a good spring. He currently has a 3.72 ERA, 1.09 whip, 18 to 12 strikeouts to walk ratio through 19.1 innings. That is amazing. It really stinks that he's in Fenway because that's not a good place, you know, for a home park. But this dude, I honestly think is legit because he has that fastball. If you have a good fastball, you can use really anything else. So I think that he is going to have a just a breakout season, and I cannot wait to see it.
Okay, Sarah, now your turn to tell us why Bayo is going to be even more legit than the already well-established as legit Cutter Crawford.
So here's the thing. I also really like Cutter Crawford, and I've taken both of these dudes. But I like Brian Bayo more, and I think there's more upside for Brian Bayo. I think the Red Sox agree with me, which is why they just signed Bayo to an extension. It's like the first extension that Craig Breslow signed with the Red Sox. And I do think that this is meaningful because Craig Breslow, before he was the president of baseball operations or whatever his title is with the Red Sox, is the guy who turned pitching around in Chicago. So I know a little bit about what Craig Breslow understands about pitching in an organization. And I think it's telling that the guy he wanted to lock up for a long time is Brian Bayo. I think if you go look at their StatCast pages, like if you just go compare on Baseball Savant, Brian Bayo and Cutter Crawford, you're going to come away a Crawford fan. There's a lot more of that pretty red color on Crawford stuff and a lot more of that blue color on Bayo stuff. And the comp for Bayo is Pedro Martinez, who he has been working with in the Dominican Republic on his pitches. He's 24 years old. And I think the upside is literally the moon with this kid. And the Red Sox were smart to lock him up for a really long time with that type of upside. Will he get there this season? I'm not entirely sure. But I think it's worth betting on in this particular cluster of pitchers where both of these guys go. The thing about Cutter Crawford at the moment, his K rate last year was 25.6% off a 6.8% walk rate. And if you compare that to Bayo, who had a 19.8% K rate and a 6.7% walk rate, you're definitely going to want to take the Cutter Crawford side of this. But what if this is the season where Bayo, who has a fastball that graded out at a max potential of 60, a slider that graded out at a max potential of 60, and a changeup that graded out at a max potential of 60, really hits all of those pitches and all of that upside and everything Craig Breslow saw with that team-friendly extension and channels his inner Pedro Martinez, I think I want the Bayo side of that because the upside is it's the moon, right? Whereas Crawford, I think, has already shown us where, like, what he's got. And I like it. I like it head-to-head better than what Bayo is doing. And I like the potential with Bayo a bit more.
Okay, can I just first say that if this were one of those shows where, like, they add points and subtract points from the panelists, I would be subtracting points for a Pedro Martinez comp. That is absolutely outrageous. I appreciate it, but my God, this Pedro freaking Martinez.
I'm not the first person to make it. And he's literally working shocking with Pedro Martinez.
It's an absolute scandal. That's crazy talk. But yeah, that would be a remarkable upside. The question that I have about Crawford, and it is, I've drafted a fair amount of him. I have him in tout. I'm a big fan. I'm generally a big fan of people who have multi-pitch arsenals, and I like all the pitches and all that. My question though, and this to me is like, I don't know if it's a screaming red flag, but it's a bit of a red flag. His performance, and this is not a lot of plate appearances, but his performance over the course of his major league career, when opponents get a third plate appearance against him in games, is it's not good. As a starter, they're hitting .345 against him with a 1.069 OPS. And maybe he doesn't have to fix this problem, right? Maybe he's just like a five inning guy forever, and that's where it stays. And I also feel like somebody with as many quality pitches as he has should be able to overcome it. But Shelley, just generally wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting tidbit. Because, he was kind of in a starter's role like towards the end of the season, but Alex Cora would like always yank him in like the fifth. Maybe he'd get like one or two outs in the fifth. So maybe that's a confidence level with Cora. But obviously he didn't do well either. So I don't know. I still believe in him. Maybe I've put too much juice on him and I have him in too many places, but I really liked what I saw. I didn't like what I saw from Bayo last year, but maybe that was just a whole year of watching it as a disenchanted Red Sox fan and just being just upset about everything. I think that there is another step for him because he was going through some transitions from the bullpen to a longer like starter's role. So yeah, Maybe there's some growth there.
I like that response. I have also a question for Sarah. So like leaving aside the Pedro Martinez nonsense. What's the most likely outcome for Bayo? Not the like, what is his 99th percentile wish casting dream outcome? What do you see as the most likely outcome for him this year? And why is it better than Cutter Crawford?
I would just like to clarify that the wish casting outcome for Brian Bayo came from Pedro Martinez. He has quotes on this because he worked with Bayo on his slider in the Dominican Republic this offseason. Like, Pedro Martinez is the dude to cite as the
no
guy.
No one is qualified to give Pedro comps, and that includes Pedro himself.
Pedro is allowed to compare guys to himself, and I will die on this hill. Sorry, what was the actual question before I got into my Pedro rant?
It was more about what you think the most likely outcome is for Bayo and for Crawford versus like, what does the ceiling look like?
Sure. With the huge caveat that I really like Cutter Crawford, I will take both of these dudes where they're going in drafts, even slightly a round or two before. I love them. They are on a ton of my stats. The thing is, Cutter Crawford, if you go back and just on Fangraphs, right? Like, let's not do the Baseball Savant thing for a second. Let's just go look at Fangraphs and where their upside is. They have a similar multi-pitch arsenal. Cutters usually top out around a 50 grade, 55 grade. Bayo's top out at a 60 grade. That is a distinct difference. The upside for Bayo is an all-star over the course of his career. And the upside for Crawford is a very good major league pitcher. I think that anytime I've got a guy working with a Hall of Famer in the Dominican Republic to improve his slider in the offseason, I want in on that. And I think that the upside for Bayo is... And I'm not trying to overstate this. I think there's a non-zero chance he comes out, shoves, and has like a 3.6 ERA. That K rate goes up to the 25-26% that we saw from Crawford last year, and the walk rate goes down. And if that is the case at 24 years old, then that six-year extension for like $55 million and change that Breslow got him to sign is a steal, because he would have gotten way more than that in arbitration. So I think that Brian Bayo has all-star upside potential this season if everything breaks right. And I've got a Hall of Famer that endorses it.
Okay. I like all that. That was a little bit more reasonable. Let's do rebuttals. Is that where we go next? Let's do some rebuttals. Who wants to rebut first? Shelley.
As a Red Sox fan, I am excited that we have two pitchers that are exciting enough that isn't like a traded player, like not like Chrissy or something like that. So two players from our farm system that is actually good and exciting to talk about. That is exciting. However, I watched Brian Bayo last year, and when he gets in a bad spot, his look on the mound, he gets flustered. He gets a little, maybe that's a maturity thing. Maybe he can work on that, but he gets flustered. And then again, the defense didn't do anything for him last year. So it was like a lot of things would snowball and it would kind of get to him. I didn't see that with Cutter Crawford, but again, Andy, you said that he didn't like really pitch that far in, you know, he got to the third inning, third time through the lineup, he got hit around and they took him out. So maybe the Red Sox trusted Bayo more, so I saw more of his vulnerability. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen that from Crawford. And I like what I've seen from him. And I'll just take him at his price versus Bayo's price.
I don't disagree with anything that Shelley just said, but the last two numbers that I'm going to leave y'all with for this, and again, this is about upside for me, right? Like, I think that right now, if you draft both of these guys where they're going, you're going to get what you're going to get. You're going to be pretty happy with it. I think both of them are upside plays relative to the guys that go around them. That said, Cutter Crawford is 27 years old this season. That is 3 years older than Brian Bayo, and he has less experience in the league than Brian Bayo does. So I just think there's a growth potential for Bayo that is very different than the growth potential for Crawford. We may have already seen the best of Cutter Crawford. And if that's what Cutter Crawford is, that's outstanding. By the way, my favorite Easter egg on Pitcher List is that if you go to Cutter Crawford's page, Cutter is spelled with a K for him on his pitch mix. And it's one of the greatest things that Nick Pollock and the geniuses over at Pitcher List have ever done. Go check it out. It'll make you smile every time, I promise. Brian Bayo is 24 years old. And some of that being flustered that Shelley is talking about, I think it's the fact that he's 24. The last number that I want to leave y'all with for both of these guys, keep in mind, they play at Fenway, which is Coors East, as far as I can tell, in terms of hitters' parks. Cutter Crawford had a 34.9% ground ball rate last season. Brian Bayo's is 56.2%. And if I'm going to bank on a pitcher doing outstanding things at a hitter-friendly park, I like a guy who throws ground balls more than I like a guy who throws fly balls.
That's good stuff. Do I have to actually pick a winner here?
No. There's no winners. Oh, it's just debating for debate's sake. And the winners are the listeners, Andy. The winners are the people who got to hear the conversation use it to inform their future fantasy baseball decisions. At the moment, though, the winners are our advertisers, because we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we've got more debates for you. You will not want to miss them. Come back.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
We're back. This one is close to my heart, as close to my heart as the Stain Rafaela debate that we were having earlier. I'm not sure who is moderating this debate. So one of y'all is going to call it in a second, because I am definitely arguing the Nelson Velasquez side of this. I believe Nelson Velasquez is a 35 plus home run bat. And whoever is moderating this one can grab it right now.
I will take the flip side of that. I will take I'll go ahead and take the under on 35 is what I'm saying.
All right. So Shelley, you're our moderator. Take us into a Nelson Velasquez debate.
I was really happy about this, because honestly, I don't really have many feelings anyway between, pro or con for Nelson Velasquez. So Sarah, convince me why I need to have a positive outlook on Nelson Velasquez.
So I mentioned earlier that I have this theory about certain players that I'm willing to be in on and players who I'm less willing to be in on. And Nelson Velasquez is one of the guys that I'm willing to be in on for the same reason I'm in on Christopher Morel, that I'm in on Johan Rojas, that I'm in on Zidane Rafaela. I think that there is a class of prospect, a particular type of prospect that constantly gets undersold. And they come to the majors and they start to do really great things in the majors. And we're all like, no. They strike out too much. They don't have good plate discipline. They're not going to be able to do the thing. And they just keep doing the thing and they force our hands. Like Christopher Morel is that kid. He comes up from Double A. He strikes out too much, but he does it with like 25, 30 home run pop. And he just kind of plays his way into the lineup and nobody can take him out. Wilson Contreras, who is also behind me right now, is that player. He was not supposed to be there. He was supposed to come up as a like emergency injury replacement because Miguel Montero and David Ross were both out at one point in June and they were worried that the Cubs didn't have catcher depth. He came up and hit so well, the Cubs never sent him back down. He never went to AAA for anything other than an injury rehab, and he wasn't on any top prospect list. Nelson Velasquez is in this category of players, and I am here for it. He came up last year with the Chicago Cubs, hit a grand slam to tie a game with the Seattle Mariners that the Cubs had no business coming back from. The pop off the bat is legit and real. We're talking about a dude who hits the ball so hard, and Chicago didn't have anywhere to play him because he's a corner infielder, not a center fielder. And so they traded him to the Kansas City Royals of all teams for a middle reliever in Jose Quas. He goes to the Kansas City Royals, and in like 198 plate appearances, he hits 16 home runs when his home park is Kauffman Stadium. That is not a home run friendly park. He is massacring the baseball. What Nelson Velasquez can do when he gets hot is in that same category of like what Patrick Wisdom can do when he gets hot. That is a huge power bat. As far as I can tell, now he's had a down spring. So the one caveat to everything I'm about to say is that if his down spring results in him being sent to the minors for any length of time, 35 might be a tough number to get to. But he's penciled in right now as the everyday DH for a Kansas City Royals team that absolutely needs a power bat. They don't have that level of power from any guy on the roster that they can count on right now, other than Salvador Perez, maybe Vinny Pasquantino. And I think that if Nelson Velasquez gets hot for even half a second in April or May, that roster spot is his. And we saw what he can do with it last year. 16 home runs in less than 200 plate appearances is absurd. And that is the type of power that gets you to 35 home runs over the course of an entire season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as you know, as we talked about with Rafaela, like this player profile is really like a blind spot for me. So this is, yeah, I maybe need to take, you know, maybe need to take more chances with guys like this. But Andy, why do you think that Nelson Velasquez will not hit 35 plus home runs?
Yeah, first of all, I love that this is just kind of a rage pick for Sarah, who's really upset at the trade to begin with, right? And I hear you.
It is.
Like he hit one of the signature home runs for the Cubs. Like for sure. Super exciting. And like the good moments are great, right? Like the highlights are incredible. And 16, 17 homers last year in 53 games is absolutely ridiculous. I agree with you, like ridiculous barrel rate, hard hit rate, all that stuff. This is another one of those cases where the Statcast page is just full of red. But like one of the glaring problems here is that Velasquez often does not make any contact, struck out 103 times in 80 games in the minors last season while hitting 239. Also didn't exactly earn his way onto the roster this spring so much. Like he's mostly dreadful, and he was pretty badly outplayed, or at least outhit by Nick Prado, who hit 421 with four homers, and is definitely going to keep the pressure on, because when that guy goes to Omaha, he is going to do the usual Nick Prado thing and hit like 380 and get on base at a 450 clip or something like that, and people are going to be calling for him. So I think that might actually be the biggest issue for Velasquez. I agree that if he actually played like 145 games, 150 games for Kansas City, he would probably get to 35. But he's also not a walker. So he's not going to be some kind of discount Kyle Schwarber, right? Like, he's not that. He's not living on base. He's not scoring, but like, he's scoring if he drives himself in. And he's not getting on base a whole lot outside of that. So I just worry that the one incredible trick that he has is not going to be enough to hold off some of the other pieces that are already in the organization and are currently out hitting him.
I will concede that Nelson Velasquez went to the Javi Baez school of I want to be swinging. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on question and answer. Sometimes I do that. I forget where I'm, what my role is.
No, you're totally fine. You are totally fine. I just honestly like his profile has like always intrigued me. Like, he had like a bonkers AFL, like in I think 2022. I remember when I was out there, like, he was just going bonkers, and I picked him up in like a couple DCs. And he just didn't quite give me what I wanted in 2022. Or was it 2023? I can't remember. Anyway, it didn't quite work out. And then he got traded. So, Sarah, is Nelson Velasquez the new Jorge Soler?
He is for me. And I find it a little bit, I understand where Andy is coming from with the Nick Prado situation. And I think that this is one of those times where one of these guys can show that power sometimes in some parts, and one of these guys can show that power all the time in all the parts. Like, Jorge Soler wound up with the Giants this season, and generally a power hitter like that goes to San Francisco, and I'm a little bit out, right? Because I'm just like, I don't know. Matt Chapman, for example, I don't love that as a landing spot for Matt Chapman. We just saw what can happen to Matt Chapman's power when you change the ballpark dimensions on him and how that can impact him as a hitter. I don't worry about that with Jorge Soler, because the home runs Jorge Soler hits are probably landing in the ocean, right? It's just like, this is a question of whether it lands in the ocean or lands in the concourse. And I'm just not worried about that. Nelson Velasquez has that type of power. Now, he swings and misses too much. He definitely does. I'm not going to even try to make the case that he's, in fact, all of the guys I'm talking about here do. That's Christopher Morel's problem. That's Patrick Wisdom's problem. That's Rafaela's problem. That's Javi Baez's problem. All of these guys, that was their problem. But the bat is a 35 home run bat. The bat is the type of, these are not cheap home runs. These are home runs that are absolutely scorched. Andy made the joke that this is a rage pick for me. It kind of is, because if I'm Jed Hoyer and I have the option of Ian Happ in left field or Nelson Velasquez in left field, I want Nelson Velasquez on my team 10 times out of 10, and Ian Happ can be traded to anywhere else. I find Ian Happ replaceable. I find Nelson Velasquez special. That's probably why I don't run the Cubs.
I mean, I've always been like anti Ian Happ for pretty much his entire career, but now I find him on like all of my teams, and I'm a little bit scared of like what has happened.
what it says what about you?
What has happened?
What has happened? Yeah, I totally meant to do that. So Andy, I just want to give you, I'm just like looking at some NFC just ADPs, just outfielders. So we got Jose Siri, Brent Rooker, Nelson Velasquez, and Alex Verdugo. Totally different profiles there. They're all going around the same spot, around the 300 pick. Who would you take?
I'll first say that I don't know why anybody takes Verdugo, unless it's one of those, like, it's one of those 50 round things. And it's like a don't touch the roster best ball situation. And I just want somebody who's going to get a bunch of at bats. And I know they're going to, like, he'd be interesting there. But that one really comes down to like, what are you lacking at that point in a draft? Right. And for sure, if I think that, you know, I'm only halfway to where I need to be in home runs, I'd take Velasquez. But if I felt light on stolen bases and I didn't feel like I had a guy who, you know, was already like a possibility to steal 40, to steal more, I'd probably go Siri. Actually, I'd probably go Rojas. That's what I've been doing. In fact, there are two places where I've drafted Velasquez so far. And one of them was in TGFBI. because I was simultaneously messaging with Sarah about coming on this podcast, and she was talking up Velasquez, and I was like, you know what, this is fate. This is stars aligning. I'm doing it. So I think I went back to back like Rojas and Velasquez there. But it's the kind of range in the draft where you can just like, man, whatever shortcoming I have, I'm just going to take a big swing on it.
Nice.
I think it's so funny that you went Rojas Velasquez there, because I've been doing that in drafts a lot. And I was able to do that in drafts this season later, earlier, and I've had to do it sooner, more recently. But Rojas and Velasquez, to me, now admittedly, you're probably taking a batting average hit with both of them. So like, you better have some sort of batting average floor that you can absorb a couple of 230s on your lineup from those two guys, because I don't think either of them is going to hit above 250. But the fact that there's like a 35 plus home run bat just sitting there that late, and in Rojas's case, I think a 40 plus steals, dude. He sold like 16 bags in under 200 plate appearances last season's insanity. The fact that both of those dudes are sitting there so late and you can get that number of steals or that number of home runs from, at least in Rojas's case, a guy who's going to stay in the lineup for defense. I agree with you that Nelson Velasquez could get pushed at DH. He's already kind of defensively a question mark. God, I love it. I love those two picks late in draft. They're both on my most rostered lists. I have the moderation for the next debate, and I'm really glad I do, because I don't, this is definitely one I don't want to debate. moving on to another pitching debate, which I find this one tremendously hard to comment on. So I'm really glad that Shelley and Andy are going to take this one. Andy proposed this one, Yamamoto as a Cy Young favorite with Spencer Strider upside. I am here for all of this. Andy, make your case.
Yeah, so ideally, my guy in this debate would not currently have an ERA of 45 and a whip of 5. I think we were talking about this before his one not so glorious inning against the Padres. But, you know, we can't have everything. I just got to believe the things that were problems in the season opening start are not going to be problems moving forward. This man walked only 28 batters in Japan last year in 171 innings. He struck out 176, right? Had a whip of 0.86. And I understand that there are differences between the leagues and great differences between the leagues, but that kind of control is not something that you'd necessarily fake, right? Like, I think the control, the actual command is going to be there in time. I think we're going to see that in his next start, his stateside start. You'd also, man, you'd like to think that Max Muncy will better be able to field his position going forward, or perhaps they can find someone who can. He was really rough in that opener as well. But this is really like what this comes down to is that it is one of those cases in which I honestly think we can let Major League Baseball kind of do the work for us sometimes. And we had six teams that reportedly tried to pay this guy $300 million or more over 10 to 12 seasons. We have other teams that didn't quite reach that level, but were willing to max out their own credit cards for it. So the league is basically telling you that he is that guy. And I also think that, like, you know, between some of the misplays in the field and between, you know, some of the walks in his first go around, man, you can see it. He's got a super deep arsenal. He's got, conservatively, I'll call it 5 pitches. It might really be more than that. He's just going to be a blast to watch. And I don't think that many teams could possibly have been that wrong on the guy. The K rate is still there. It's been there in the spring. You know, he still struck out a couple of batters in that disastrous inning to start the season. So I don't want people to just think, oh, I can totally ignore that. It was completely fluky. I mean, it's real data. It really happened. I just think this is going to get so much better. And we have season upon season in Japan that are just flawless, that are just almost impeccable. So I think really in time, we're going to see some special things from this guy this year.
Yeah, I really am intrigued by Yamamoto, and God, that was a rough start to his MLB career. Shelley, make the case against Yamamoto as the new Spencer Strider.
Yeah, that was an extremely frustrating inning to watch, because he just basically got BABIPed to death, because it's not just the bad defense. It was just little bloops that would get past the infielders and right in front of the outfielders. And it just kind of snowballed on him. And, you know, he came out after that start. He's like, oh, I know what I need to fix. I can fix it. However, he gives me a Singa type of vibe, not because of Singa's like lack of control. It's more of coming over from Japan to MLB. The ball is bigger, the seam's smaller. It's a very different feel. And I don't think that he has the feel for it yet. Will he get it? Yes. I just don't think that we're going to see it this year. Maybe it's next year. Maybe it's the year after next that we see what he was doing in Japan. Because I do believe that the team, obviously, like you said, the teams were like, I want this guy. He's super young. He's super talented. I want him on my team. I just don't know if we're going to see this from him yet. And this is as a manager who owns him, you know, who has him on like 3 or 4 different teams. So I love the talent, and I'm hoping that he comes back around quicker than Senga did last year for the Mets. But I think it might be like a little bit of touch and go before he really gets there. So maybe he'll be Spencer Strider in about 2 years.
It's a really interesting point about the baseball and the transition. I've noticed this on the hitting side, watching Seiya Suzuki come over from Japan. And I've talked about this on other podcasts, not on this one yet, I don't think. But I do feel like even for Shohei Ohtani, there was like that year transition period where what we see now is Shohei Ohtani, he was not that guy in his first season or two. Andy, what do you think about the transition period here? Do you think that this is a prediction that is relevant for 2024? Or are we more looking into the future with Yamamoto?
I can't rule that out. And I also feel like every case is very individual, right? Because we've seen plenty of guys, and some of this is age related, but we've seen plenty of guys who, when they come over from Japan, that first year is their best year. But again, that oftentimes reflects like the age at which players used to come over, and he's pretty unique in that regard. And that's surely his age is also a big reason why teams are just saying, you know, shoving this huge pile of gold into the middle of the table and trying to capture him in the offseason, right? Because we just don't get that many opportunities with guys this age. So I don't want to rule it out as a possible reason for the dicey spring and the dicey first start. But man, I just like watching these games, and I'm not going to pretend that I'm, you know, that I watch every scrap of baseball like I possibly can during the spring. But I've been pretty interested in Yamamoto, and I've seen an awful lot of him this spring. And man, I feel like he's been victimized more than anything by Muncy just being a turnstile, and Gavin Lux was a turnstile when he was at short. And I can't, like, there were moments in the Padres game where, like, how did the ball just go through Max Muncy? It was like a glitch in a video game. It was really, really bad in the field. And that's a thing that they're going to have to fix. They're either going to have to, Muncy's going to have to not be that guy, or they're going to have to address it somehow. Cause infield defense is clearly going to play a factor here as well.
It's a great point about the Dodgers defense. It was something I noticed in the projections last year when I was sort of looking at things. I mean, when they lost Corey Seager at shortstop, they have never really replaced Corey Seager at shortstop. Yeah. And you can't clone Mookie Betts, right? Like, somebody has to be able to hold down second base while Mookie is at short. So that's a really great point on the Dodgers defense. But you're absolutely right. Yamamoto's stuff looks better than some of the results that he's getting. Shelley, he's clearly so talented. I think that Andy's point about all of the teams being in on him, including the Cubs, by the way, who were definitely wanted him to come to Chicago rather than going to LA. I'm sure they offered approximately 75% of what the Dodgers did for Yamamoto. An argument I'll have with Jed Hoyer someday. Shelley, do you feel like investing in Yamamoto's first season is worth it, given how in all of MLB is here?
Yeah, because I have him in a lot of places. So I'm like, yeah, go home. But I do think that maybe I was a little bit persuaded by the glowing reports that I've read. Just because the Dodgers defense is what it is. Currently, like in his one inning, he had a 517 BABIP. Obviously, that is not sustainable. That is going to come down. So we're not going to see like that first inning. Like, it snowballed on him. But I think he's fine. Like in my main event, with the 9th pick, I got him in the 4th round. Prior to that, in like other like DCs and stuff, I was having to take him in the 3rd, and I felt like I needed to take him like in the 3rd, like in the middle part of the 3rd, before he would come back around. So he has fallen a bit. So I'm taking the, you know, the discount, but it still might be a bit hairy while he figures everything out.
I love that for you, that you got him in the 4th. I was talking to a friend who was drafting his first main last week while he was doing some prep, and he's like, I'm going to have to take Yamamoto in the 2nd. Of course, this was before the Korea series. I'm going to give each of you a minute long rebuttal. Andy, you can start with your case for Yamamoto.
Yeah, I mean, again, the foundation of it is the absolute certainty that seemingly every, not just like a whole bunch of major league clubs, but like literally like a quarter of all major league clubs, some of the smartest teams in baseball were just like $300 million is not a well, let's find out kind of number, right? Like that is an absolutely certain that this guy at some point, probably very soon in the next 10 years, is going to be that guy. So I think the unanimity of opinion within baseball on Yamamoto is probably the best argument for him. Also, I just like you and whatever, I'm not, you know, I'm not a scout and I'm not in the batter's box against him, but my goodness, his stuff just looks really, really fun. And I think that the thing that, so many people are actually worried about right now, which, you know, it would appear, you look at the box scores, it seems like his command isn't great. That is an actual strength of this player. And I think as he gets comfortable in the majors, you know, the fact that he's like kind of superhuman in terms of command is going to show.
That's a great point. Shelley, your last rebuttal.
Yeah. I mean, while I will agree with Andy, all teams were in on him, but yeah, they were offering him 5, 6, 7 year deals. So he might be good in year 2, year 3. And while his command is pretty good, it's a totally new ball. It's totally new everything. It's going to take him a little bit to figure everything out. So maybe next year, maybe the price will be cheaper and it will be a better buy.
Awesome. We are going to, on that note, take a quick break for our sponsors. Last break. On the flip side, we have a couple more debates. We have our love it or leave it. You will not want to miss any of it. But first, a quick break.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
All right. We are back, and I believe Andy is going to moderate our next debate, also about a pitcher.
Yeah, I actually suggested this one. We're going to talk about Jared Jones, because obviously, super buzzy player. He's going to make that, you know, he's actually on the major league roster coming out of spring. Going to make starts for the Pittsburgh Pirates. It's really fun. Really, really fun. He is a Nick Pollock favorite, I believe. So let's have a little Jared Jones debate. The way that Sarah framed it is Jared Jones a streamer, a dude, or a bust? So I'll start with you, Sarah. What do you think?
Okay, I want to be very clear because I'm on the record as having Paul Skeens in a bunch of leagues. So like clearly I liked Paul Skeens a little bit more than I like Jared Jones, but that does not impact the fact that I think Jared Jones is a dude, and I think Nick Pollock is absolutely right. If you go look at what Jared Jones has done in the minor league so far, you see a guy who has a lot of K per nines that are over 10%. You actually see some numbers in terms of the K rate and the walk rate that look pretty impressive to me. You've got a guy who is striking out 28.3% of the batters that he faced in AAA on a 9.7% walk rate. You've got a guy who has multiple pitches that he can command. And again, you know, we were talking about with Bayo, one of the things I really liked about Brian Bayo as opposed to Cutter Crawford is how many 60 grade pitches he had. Jared Jones offers two. He's got a 60 grade fastball that he's already tapped that 60 grade potential on. He's got a 60 grade potential slider that he's tapped a 55 grade potential on. And he pairs that with a changeup that is 50 grade and a command that is pretty good. So I'm excited about the potential here, even though it means all of those times I took Paul Skeens probably have to wait a little bit. Thankfully for me, the Pirates opening day roster also has like a bit of Martin Perez in it and some Marco Gonzalez and some other guy. I think Skeens will be up sooner rather than later, but Jones looks like a guy who could potentially shove. And I think there's a chance he shoves in a way where you're not just kind of like rotating him into that spot when he's got weak matchups and you're taking him down when he doesn't have weak matchups. I think he could potentially be a guy that you just set and forget it in your lineup. You are currently getting him at a ridiculous ADP of 431. Now, that's in 15 teamers. The range is wide. There are very few guys in NFBC ranges who have quite as wide of a range as Jared Jones. He's gotten as early as pick 210. I'm guessing that that's some of the more recent picks after we knew that he was going to be in the rotation. He's gotten as late as 626. If you wanted to get him this weekend in Fab, you probably dropped a pretty penny on him to make sure he was in your roster. But I think he's worth it because I think there's a non-zero chance he's going to be a guy that you want to pitch most weeks.
Okay, Shelley, streamer, dude, or other?
Definitely streamer. He's a Pirates pitcher and he's not Paul Skeens. He is a streamer. I mean, you know, we were talking about like the Red Sox and I was like so excited that we had like two Red Sox pitchers to actually talk about. When have we ever had like a Pirates pitcher to talk about? No offense, Mitch Keller. Like we toyed around with you for a bit, but we kind of know what you are. I mean, I've liked Jared Jones. Like I have him on a couple of dynasty league teams because he wasn't getting the pub that I thought that he deserved based on like the strikeout stuff that he was doing. But I don't think he is what he is like showing in spring training because it seems a bit higher than what I've ever seen before. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I'm just going to go with like what I have seen him go through the minors. He has had like a slight like home run to fly ball issue. And while that might not be a big deal in PNC Park, full disclosure, I picked him up in a 12 team in FBC OC this weekend. You know, I think I paid like $40-something for him. That's fine. I'm going to take a flyer on him. But I don't think that he is, in my opinion, going to be a bona fide like ace, like a starter, like every single week. I think that there are going to be times, you know, cores aside, of course, that there is going to be like some really sketchy matchups. We haven't really seen him like too much in AAA. He pitched 82 innings last year, which was really great. But it's like, I think that there is going to be like some bumps because he just wasn't really high on prospect lists. Like all the prospect reports that I've read that they were like, okay, yeah, he could be a number two, but he's probably like a number three or something like that. So I really trust people who see him more than I do versus just looking at a very small sample size when in spring training, that I think there are going to be times where you're like, I don't know if I want to start him, you know, against the Diamondbacks or the Padres. So I think he's going to be a streamer, but sometimes you need to take a chance and I could be totally wrong.
If I can hit you guys with a question, well, this is more for Sarah, given the dude take. I feel like I'm vulnerable to pitchers like this is what I'll say first of all, right? Like the guys where like the pitching ninja clips are really great, right? The, you know, high 90s triple digit velocity guys, great slider, fun stuff, misses bats. The 50 walks in 126 minor league innings last season, the 8 walks in 16 spring innings, that kind of stuff sneaks up on you, right? Like all those free base runners sneak up on you. I feel like every time I've seen a hype tweet about Jones, Nick aside, Nick is very fond of Jones in a way that doesn't, I don't mean to drag him into this necessarily. But like all the hype tweets begin with, you know, the five walks notwithstanding, blah, 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 blah. He looked great. So like, that's not a problem you can carry into the major leagues and have success. So like, have you seen anything? Are there comps for you with Jones where you just believe that's either going to not matter because he's going to miss so many bats anyway, or that's really something he's going to be able to overcome?
So it's a great question. It actually goes back to, we're going to have Nick Pollock on the show in the coming weeks. So when we do, this is something I'm definitely going to ask him about, because I find two pieces of advice that Nick gives to be contradictory. And I am like, I'm not sure what to do with this dude. And I go back and forth in drafts. I kind of have done it one way and done it the other way. It is absolutely correct that Jared Jones has the potential to be a whip killer. If he is a dude who walks guys that frequently and you have him in your roster all the time, your whip is going to go up, right? I often find that in order to get some of the guys with the high strikeout potential later in drafts, you have to take guys who are a whip risk. Edward Cabrera versus Kyle Hendricks or Marcus Stroman, right? Like, what are you going to do? Like, one of those guys is probably going to strike out fewer guys, give you lower ratios, and also not walk as many guys. And the other guy has huge strikeout potential, huge walk potential, and their ratios are probably going to balloon as a result. So the don't draft Toby's piece of advice versus the watch out for whip killers piece of advice, those are contradictory things for me, right? Like, I think those are really hard to sort out. Jared Jones is a pitcher I'm leaning into in the don't draft Toby's type of realm. Like, this could be a real thing. And to Shelley's point, where she was talking about when was the last time the Pirates had pitchers like this? I remember it because I'm an NL Central girl. I watch the Pirates all the time. And it was when they had Tyler Glasnow and when they had Jameson Taillon, and those guys were coming up. And both of those guys wound up getting traded for other people. But those were some really interesting pitcher days for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Not necessarily an endorsement of the Pirates being able to develop their own pitchers. Gerrit Cole came up at about the same time that Glasnow and Taillon were coming up for the Pirates, right? So they have had those guys before. I feel like we're seeing the next wave of them with Jones and with Skeens. And I honestly don't know how it's going to go, but I like it going most of their games against the NL Central a lot more than I'd like it if they were in the NL East or the AL East.
Shelley, how do you feel about like just the idea of, because like Jones isn't particularly pricey in drafts just yet. There's a little bit of buzz about him over the last few days, but you know, outside the pitcher list world, he's not like among, you know, your general population of fantasy baseball players. He hasn't been a you know, massive buzz guy until this point. What about just the idea of passing up that much upside at this point in a draft? And I, you know, I get your take on him being kind of a matchup guy right now. But man, this is one of those cases for me where like, what if everything goes right?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And if I was in just like a 12 team league, again, like I said, I just picked him up off the waiver wire. He's the guy that you want to take, because I could be wrong. Sarah could be right. He could be like a freaking dude. Like, he really could, because we've seen the strikeout stuff. It has been extremely exciting. I just fall back onto what I have seen in the minors, and I'm just like, I don't know. But again, like, if you're in a small league and you have the opportunity to take chances, this is the type of player you take. But in like those 15 team leagues, in my opinion, he's more of a streamer type.
Okay, let's do some rebutting. Sarah, go.
I've got two reasons that you should take Jared Jones with a late pick. And I'm just going to name some guys who go at about the same place, 15 team ADP, as of right now on the NFBC. This is about 10 picks before Jones and 10 picks after. Taijuan Walker, Kyle Hendricks, Abner Uribe, Tyler McGill, Hector Neris, Jared Jones, Jacob DeGrom, Jordan Wicks, Sawyer Gibson Long. Of those names, you got a couple of closer specs. You've got some of the safest pitchers in the universe if you're trying to protect your ratios and just get some wins. And you've got one guy with a job and a lot of upside. I think Jared Jones is a great pick, particular range. And if you're choosing between the Kyle Hendrickses of the world, and look, I am a Cubs fan. Nobody loves Kyle Hendricks more than I do. If you're choosing between Kyle Hendricks and Jared Jones at that point of a draft, the answer is Jared Jones, and it is not particularly close. The second thing I'll say, just to the whether he's a streamer or a dude question here, I actually think you can punt this question a little bit because the Pirates schedule allows you to do so. They're going to open the season in Miami against the Marlins. Not a great team, great pitcher part. Then they go to our nation's capital to play the Nationals. Again, terrible team, okay place to pitch. They do have to face the Orioles. It's in Pittsburgh, so it's not terrible for you. But then they get the Tigers. They have to go to Philadelphia. Then they get the Mets. They get a rebuilding Red Sox team, a Brewers team that has not been good at hitting in recent years, the Giants in San Francisco, which is a pitcher's park, and the Oakland Athletics. Give it until May, people, and see what Jared Jones has done for you. You might like what you see.
I like that a lot. Shelley, your rebuttal.
Yeah, that was a really, really good rebuttal. And Sarah, also, I hope that you kept Paul Skeens because I think that the Pirates will be competitive by May, so they might call him up. So this is like maybe like a semi-endorsement for Paul Skeens. Yeah, but I mean, I love that schedule. And I mean, you could really make that work. Even in like a 15-teamer. I just wonder about like those dog days of summer when you're going to Colorado, you have to go to LA, you have to go to Padres. Like, it's going to be like the first part of the season. Like, if you're able to like, you know, kind of, I don't know, maybe kind of what I'm trying to say is stream him in and out. So stream in the beginning and drop him in the summer when it's, you know, he has to face like really, really, really tough teams. I just think that's what he's going to be until that's what I think that he's going to be until I see him against like legit major league rosters. So he's still a streamer for me, but he has that sexy upside where he could totally be a dude, but I just need to see a little bit more against major league pitching. I mean, major league hitting.
I did keep Paul Skeens for the record. I ended up dropping Jameson Taillon, who hasn't thrown a single pitch in a spring training game. Figured I could pick him up off the waiver wire later. And I wound up, the pitchers I picked up this first FAB period were Luis Hill, DL Hall, who I think has a chance to do something special in Milwaukee, and then some closer specs in places where I had Devin Williams and needed to go Payam, Sharibe, Griffin Jacks, that type of situation. So I did keep Paul Skeens, and we're hoping I can hold on to him for 1 month while this works itself out. That was fun. Who knew we had such passionate takes about Jared Jones? We have one last debate for y'all before we close it out the way we always do with our love it or leave it. I'm going to moderate this one, and I love this debate topic because y'all know I'm a Cubs fan, and we're looking today for the next great ex-Cardinals outfielder, and the question of the day is Richie Palacios that dude? Shelley, you get the pro side for Richie Palacios being the next great ex-Cardinals outfielder.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Cardinals fans. I think that we might have something here. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I mean, he was pretty good for the Cardinals last year. He hit 258, 307, 516 with six homers across 102, plate appearances for the Cards. And then he went to Driveline, and he has been trying to work on, you know, improving his launch angle, his bat speed, all that stuff. And then he got traded to Tampa, and he has been having a bonkers spring training. He's hitting 308, 362, 519 with three homers across 58 plate appearances. While I don't know how the whole playing time is going to work out at the beginning of the season with the Rays, because, you know, Tampa, like they're going to mix and match. But I think at some point, Richie Palacios is going to have an everyday role. I have him on like all of my DCs, multiple dynasty leagues. I just think that he is going to have a breakout season. I mean, I'm thinking like 20 home runs, maybe 15 steals. Like, I think that he is going to be like that late pick that you look back at the end of the season. You're like, oh yeah, that's why I won my league, because I got Richie Palacios in the last round of my draft and he just went off. So I am all in on Richie Palacios.
I love that you're all in on Richie Palacios, and I love that you're all in on the Cardinals being bad at judging their outfield talent. Andy, why should we chill a little bit on Richie Palacios?
I love that. I mean, I just absolutely love that you're just digging through the Cardinals discard pile looking for anybody who might be a gem. This would, of course, for that reason, be a very fun story. And he has had a really splashy spring. I get it. This feels to me like we're putting a lot on Driveline to give him a trait that he did not previously have, right? I think it was 8 home runs in the minors last year, 6 in the big leagues, which by far his like biggest power output, I think, that we've seen in his professional career. Only 4 home runs the season before. He's had 20 steal speed, but only just 20 steal speed in the minors. Also like great on base skills. He just feels to me like somebody who is much more valuable in real life than we're probably going to end up seeing in fantasy. But again, I am a great supporter of former Cardinals doing big things for other teams, so I am not opposed to him being very good. I think I want more from my outfielders in fantasy in pretty much every format. And I don't know that I see a likely path to consistent playing time when everyone is healthy, right? I think part of his immediate appeal is the fact that we've got some guys who are not currently healthy, but they come back, and then there's a real squeeze for the Rays. And I feel like unless he continues hitting and hitting extremely well, he's going to be the odd man out.
That's a great point, and that's actually where I was going to go with my question. So, Shelley, I'm just going to start right there. The playing time question for Palacios with the Rays. At the moment, it looks pretty good because Josh Lowe is starting the season on the IL. We've got somebody else is hurt there.
DeLuca, right?
DeLuca, thank you. I'm like, I know it's a hand fracture. I just blanked on the name. Johnny DeLuca out with a hand fracture. So Palacios is the guy for right now, but that maybe lasts a month. It might last a month and a half if he's really lucky. How do you see Palacios playing himself into consistent playing time after the Rays get healthy?
Yeah, I will caveat this that I drafted Johnny DeLuca a lot prior to his injury and then switched to Richie Palacios. So he is my, my replacement there. But anyway, I think that he can just bully himself into playing time at some point. I mean, it really stinks that he is not like a outstanding center fielder, because Jose Siri, that's why he is out in center field. While Siri can be exciting from like a fantasy aspect, it's very, very volatile. But what I really have liked from Palacios this spring training specifically is after he went to Driveline, he is pulling the ball more and he is also putting it more in the air. And that is what you like to see. That is what he worked on. We're seeing it in spring. Whether it will stick in the regular season, who knows? But I've seen some improvements. And I just think that we always have like some type of Rays player that totally just like blows us out of the water with like, where did this guy come from? And I just think that maybe Richie Palacios is that guy.
I mean, I'm looking at some of this plate skill stuff, and I'm kind of inclined to agree with you. He's definitely not my profile because he strikes out under 20% of the time, and I like the guys who strike out a lot and hit a lot of bombs. We know that Andy does too, but I'm curious, Andy, I'm looking at this, and it seems like he could be the type of guy who bullies himself into more playing time, if for no other reason than the on-base skills, with the exception of his stint with the Cardinals in the major league, truly look pretty good. He's got a K rate that has been under 20% at every single stop except for one short stint in Cleveland in AAA when he was 25 years old. He walks at a decent clip. Is there a reason that you think he's going to get pushed out by Josh Lowe, Johnny DeLuca, and or other guys who may get healthy in Tampa Bay?
Yeah. First of all, I think this is maybe what I was alluding to when I suggested that he's probably more valuable in real life necessarily than in fantasy. Because, a 390 minor league OBP, 390, 392, that's no joke. That is a truly valuable skill. And it is the kind of thing that can keep somebody in a major league lineup. I mean, shoot, we were talking about Ian Happ before. Nobody wants Ian Happ, but man, the guy gets on base, right? Like just not making outs is a big skill. And if that translates for Palacios at the major league level, it's a big deal, and the Rays are going to care. I just think the crunch comes when Lowe is back, and it's so difficult to take Siri off the field, right? Because he robs the other team pretty consistently. He's a wonderful defensive center fielder, and so he can play through slumps, and he can play through bad times at bat that other players can't. But I do think this is Palacios's path to becoming, the Rays are so annoying for fantasy purposes and in the obvious way that they have all these guys who play like four times a week, right? Which is not quite enough to excite you in fantasy, but it's also enough to get you interested and it allows you to tell yourself a story about, man, what if he, what if we can just get that to five times, six times? He might end up being one of those guys. I'm also just a little bit, again, skeptical that the power numbers that we began to see last year are really going to stick.
Totally fair and reasonable. And the Rays are like outside this side of the Giants, maybe the most annoying team in fantasy baseball. Mm-hmm. Managing those platoons, especially in a weekly lineup situation, even if you get a Friday change, it can be really a headache. Shelley, you get a 1 minute rebuttal, and then Andy gets a 1 minute rebuttal, and we'll close out the debate segment of this podcast.
Yeah, Richie Palacios could be the last pick of your draft. 99.9% of the time, you're going to drop whoever you draft last. Take an upside guy who has shown gains this spring training on things that he has worked on. And if he doesn't work out, he doesn't get the playing time, you can just drop him. But I am putting all of my chips for last pick chips into Richie Palacios. And I think he could pay dividends this year.
Awesome. Andy, your last rebuttal.
Yeah, here's where, I agree fundamentally with that philosophy. And I do think that's what we should do with our final couple picks. I just think we've already talked about some guys that, should be preferred to Palacios. If that's your, if you approach the last pick of your draft as like a what if, right? Like what if things actually, what if he hits like his 90th percentile possible outcome? That's Velasquez. That's, again, he wasn't even a topic, but that's Johan Rojas, right? That's Victor Scott. That's these guys. Those are players with like absolutely exceptional traits where like they can turn around an entire category for you if things go right. And I just don't, outside of maybe an OBP league, I'm not sure I can get there with Palacios.
Oh man, Palacios and an OBP league. That's the dream right there. But I love it. And I like all of these names. I like hearing who people are taking late in drafts. One of the things I noticed, and maybe I'll notice too, as I was looking at my most drafted players, obviously with two drafts left to go, it's all my late round guys, right? Like I try to mix it up early. I don't try to be super invested in those guys I'm taking in the first 10 rounds. But man, late, I am taking the same dudes over and over again. I have a lot of Nelson Velasquez, I have a lot of Sedan Rafaela, a lot of Johan Rojas, a lot of Bryce Terang. I mean, the people who my season hinges on are some of these guys who we took in the 20th round or later, and they are the most fun to talk about.
It's really funny that you say that, because a lot of my leagues, I have a lot of late round DJ LeMahieu, Richie Palacios. So I can definitely tell that I go more safe and boring, but I can rely on them. And you guys take like major risk and swings, and I love it. Like it's really just, we approach like the late rounds kind of differently. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely can't wait to come back and see how it works out for all of us at the end of the season. We are going to leave the show the way we always leave it, with a love it or leave it. One thing from baseball this week that each of us loved and or could have done without. Andy, as our guest, you get to go first.
Well, I guess I can give you one of each because it I apologize for the fact that this involves the Cardinals, but I could have done without seeing Dylan Carlson get hurt. Right. Like on the eve of the opening day. Right. Dylan Carlson goes down, and he's been a little bit of a snake bit player, obviously, over the last couple of years. The thing that you like about it, and again, don't wish injury on anybody. But man, Victor Scott now getting a shot in the opening day lineup as the opening day center fielder for the Cardinals. is super exciting. He stole 94 bases in the minor leagues in a season. And we just, you know, one of my like little hot takes, you know, I don't know. We always try to have bold predictions on Yahoo at some point. And I think I said that somebody in the majors this year is going to steal like 80 or 90 bags. And man, Victor Scott is the guy who, like, you know, we haven't seen that in like 40 years. You know, we haven't seen somebody like, I'm talking like old school Tim Raines, Vince Coleman, Ricky Henderson style base stealing. Like Victor Scott could be that guy. I don't think he's going to hit at the top of the lineup necessarily, but man, I am super excited about this player.
I'm also very excited about Victor Scott, and I did not want to see Dylan Carlson get hurt at all, but I agree with you. Victor Scott is a fun player to watch. I don't hate the Cardinals players. I think that they bring up some guys who are really interesting. I'm a Cubs fan, so I want the Cardinals to always lose, except for Wilson Contreras, who I had like good things for at all times, always. That's on the Cubs, not on the Cardinals. Victor Scott is fun, and I love the idea of watching a guy steal 90 plus bases.
Yeah, he was like my last reserve pick in Tout Wars, so I'm really excited about it. And same. What I like about him is he's not up there with like a wimp noodle, right? Like he actually has some power. Like hearing the balls come off of his bat in the AFL, like you could tell, like this is not just a guy who knows just how to run the bases. He has a little bit of pop, so I think he's going to be pretty interesting this year. It's a great pick.
All right, I'm going to do mine next because I think Shelley's is the perfect one to bring us home here at the end. But if you are a Cubs fan and you've ever been to Wrigley Field at the home opener, so the Cubs actually open on the road against the defending World Series champion Rangers, but they will be playing at home on April 1st. You know how special that Cubs home opener is. Packed house, Wrigley Field, April. Baseball's been gone for months and months and months, and it's finally back in a neighborhood that is quite literally built around the game of baseball. This year, the Cubs have manipulated their starting rotation so that Shota Imanaga, I've been doing that wrong all offseason. I learned it the wrong way originally, and I have to learn it back the right way. Shota Imanaga is making his major league debut on the Cubs home opener. And I have rarely been as excited about anything as I am for a pitcher to get to make his major league debut at a baseball cathedral for his first start. I hope to God it goes well, because if it doesn't go well, I'm just going to cry. But I think it's going to go well. And he's had a fun spring, and I'm excited for Shota.
Yeah, it's just like it's storylines like this that just make me absolutely giddy and smile about baseball. Something like that is just like, yes, this is why I watch too much baseball throughout the year. It's just like storylines like this. Great, great story. So are you going to that game, by the way?
I am, and I have tickets in. Okay, so if you know how Wrigley Field is laid out, like I'm in the 200 area, which is the not terribly expensive tickets, but like the, like still in the lower grandstand.
Yeah.
We're in the third row right behind home plate. So I'm going to have a perfect view of all of his crazy pitches, and I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
I'm kind of getting FOMO a little bit, and you and I were talking before the podcast started about how, man, I think I'm kind of out on these April games at Wrigley Field unless somebody can promise me that it's going to be 75 degrees, because Wrigley can be just the coldest place on earth on like a, it's weird, but like on a 40 degree day, the wind the right way, it's a trying experience sometimes. But if it's at all tolerable, man, I'm really anxious to see him up close.
Well, if you wind up at Wrigley on the home opener, you know where to find me. So just come say hi, Andy. all right, Shelley, bring us home with your love it or leave it for this week.
For me and maybe a lot of other listeners, draft season is over. All of the prep that we have been doing all winter, all of the studying, all of the hemming and hawing of what we do here, what we do there, it's done. It's done. And now the fun begins. Now we get to watch the games. Now we get to go through Fab every single Sunday. This is where the grind comes. This is this part of the season where we love it the most, because we get to watch games. We get to react to all the results and all of this. This is where it's fun. And we are here finally after the long, long, hard winter. We are here finally. I cannot wait.
I can't wait either. And I can't think of a better way for us to start off the baseball season. Y'all, we're so excited that you've joined us here on Fantasy Feud to talk out some of our baseball takes. Andy, we're so grateful for you making some time right before the baseball season to join us. Tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work, and what you're working on right now.
Oh, man, this has been really fun. It's great. It's great talking to you both. Yeah, folks can find me on Yahoo. I pop up in your little draft room when there's about 3 minutes to go before you pick. And I say some nonsense and try to pep talk you. And then you get started. We have so much content out there right now. And obviously our ranks, our draft kit, everything available at Yahoo Fantasy. And they can find me. I'm still hanging out there on X or Twitter or whatever you guys prefer to call it, at Andy Barron. So they can always hit me up there too.
Awesome. And I love the work y'all do at Yahoo. I have a handful of leagues that have been over there forever. It's a great, great place to draft, great place to run a team. And I'm definitely on there all the time. Shelley, what are you up to right now? And tell us what you're working on.
I've kind of taken a break from content. Outside of this podcast, which I'm still glad to be part of this podcast, but I've kind of taken a break because life. But I will still, you know, be on the Twitter machine tweeting about baseball, but you can catch me there at ShelleyV_643. And baseball starting. Cannot wait.
And I just want to say, I saw your tweet about stepping back from a couple of projects. I think that's such a healthy thing to do. I have had moments in my life where I've had to step back from things. And I think that people don't realize that most of us who are doing all of this fantasy baseball stuff also have full-time jobs we're dealing with. We also have our families and our life and all the things that we have going on, and keeping the people we love safe and comfortable and care and being, you know, just good humans. In addition to this baseball work, we love baseball, but you know, sometimes it can be a lot. And so I think I just really want to applaud you for doing what you need to do for you. And I'm so glad you're here with us on Fantasy Feud and that we get to continue to do this together.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't, you know, stop doing this, because this is like a really, really fun hour and a half that I get to just, you know, talk about baseball with some people that I admire and respect. It's really cool to be here.
Oh, that's the best. It's like baseball therapy. We are your baseball therapy argumentative hour once a week, and you can find us at PL Fantasy Feud on all of the socials. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. We're still relatively new, so if you leave us a 5-star review and a rating, it will help people find the show. Let us know what you want to hear us debate about here on Fantasy Feud. And until next time, I'm Sarah Sanchez for my co-host, Shelley Verstrait, our guest, Andy Barons. You can find me at @BCB_Sarah. And thanks for listening.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.